and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 28, 2021. A South Sudanese activist is calling on the transitional government in Sudan to help South Sudanese refugees.
Some of them are involved in selling illegal drugs to earn a living. This is the situation facing our youth here.
And UNICEF says millions of South Sudanese children are out of school.
About the 2.8 million who are out of school, children in South Sudan. And this is a kind of representing almost 3 in 5 children in South Sudan who are out of school.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese activist is calling on the transitional government in Sudan to discourage refugees from engaging in intercommunal violence. Tensions have escalated among some South Sudanese communities in refugee camps around the Sudanese capital over the past few months. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Activist Teresa Emilio Ayo, who is also employed as a social worker, says within the past 3 months, more than 15 refugees were killed during intercommunal fighting in Khartoum. Emilio attributes the increase in violence to the current economic situation in both Sudan and South Sudan, but says some of the violence stems from revenge attacks between the communities. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Emilio says some of the violence is also connected to drug abuse among some refugees who seem to have nowhere to turn for help. She says local authorities and concerned organizations need to intervene.
Some of them are involved in selling illegal drugs to earn a living. This is the situation facing our youth here. Girls are also involved in the same act, and some brew local beer. These are some side effects of the displacement.
Last week, at least 4 South Sudanese were killed, including a pregnant woman, during a clash between 2 rival communities at Bantu refugee camp in the Jebel Awliya area of Khartoum. In March this year, Sudanese judicial authorities sentenced 600 South Sudanese refugees in Khartoum to 6 months in prison after they were found guilty of engaging in intercommunal fighting, which led to the deaths of 7 people during the Eid of al-Fitr holiday. Emilio says Sudanese authorities have been trying their best to improve the situation in the camps, but seems to be losing hope in finding solutions for ending the circle of violence among South Sudanese refugees.
The Sudanese government is frustrated with this situation. If they are not registered with full refugee status, and yet you are involved in a violent act, what can the government do? That is why when they are found guilty, they are imprisoned and expelled from the country. As activists, we can't say much because our children have committed a crime.
Emilio accuses some unnamed Sudanese political groups of exploiting the young people for their own personal gain.
There are people who are exploiting the youth by giving them some money and asking them to participate in the protest with the aim of causing insecurity in Sudan. They are not supposed to accept this, but due to the economic situation they are in, some are doing this. Some causes of the violence are revenge attacks to pay back some incidents in South Sudan.
Sudanese humanitarian officials were not immediately available for comment on this story. Emilio suggests that it would be beneficial to local Sudanese communities if the refugees are screened and are offered job opportunities in Sudan. She says unless Sudanese authorities provide skills training or jobs to young South Sudanese refugees, some of them will remain a threat in Sudanese neighborhoods.
There is a need to develop their skills so that the host country can also benefit from them in many ways. When they are healed from their different addiction, the local communities will also benefit from them. But when nothing is done to them, there will be a burden on the host communities, and that way they will always be labeled in a negative way.
Sudan is home to more than 861,000 South Sudanese refugees, second in number only to Uganda, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Authorities in Jonglo State see more than 10 people returning from a refugee camp in Ethiopia to Jonglo State were attacked on Tuesday in Akobo County. The commissioner of Oror County says the attackers abducted at least 2 children. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Oror County Commissioner Tang Chatim says 2 small children, 2 and 4 year old boys, were abducted when a group of more than 10 refugees returning from Ethiopia were ambushed in Akobo County on Tuesday.
When the region between Akobo West and Akobo East, they fall in ambush and they have been captured. One woman, they need to kill her with a knife, and then he was fall down, and then he ran away. And the students who came from Ethiopia, all of them, they ran away in the bush, and the 2 children have been abducted, and one of them, his name, Sibit Patio Malual, he has been abducted yesterday. And the second one have been called Yal Gadwekai from Nirol County.
Chatim called on the national government to deploy security forces to facilitate the safe return of South Sudanese from camps in Ethiopia.
All these children, they are brought from Ethiopia, and they need to come back home to Nirol County in Pasai Payam. That is why they came and fall in ambush, and they did not reach in Uror County. And the youth and this lady, they reached into Kaikui, in Akobo West, and they are there now. And I got this report fully from them. So there is no forces going there, because the distance between the place where the incident happening, it is very far for Kaikui, and is very far for Akobo East.
Jonglo State Police spokesman Majak Daniel Tuor says police in the area could not arrest or pursue the suspects because they had no vehicles to pursue the criminals. Civil society activist David Garangot of the Jonglo Civil Society Network is urging the national government to speed up the graduation of unified forces so they can help provide security to South Sudanese who are returning from the refugee camps from neighboring countries.
I'm really calling upon the parties to the agreement to expedite the implementation of the agreement, especially the Chapter 2 of the, that is the security sector, said that all the unified forces are graduated immediately, and to make sure that the security is put in place by the government and strategize on the modalities to return back the people or the returnees to their localities.
Chapter 2 of the September 2018 peace deal requires the parties to contain, screen and train 83,000 necessary unified forces to take charge of security during the ongoing transitional period. The unity government, which was formed in February 2020, cited financial constraints as the cause of the delay in the graduation of the unified forces. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
A new report released by the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and the government of South Sudan says millions of children in South Sudan are not in school. The 200-page report says children with disability face additional hardships. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
John Yugu, the education specialist at UNICEF, says the situation analysis report was produced following a study carried out from 2018 to 2020 with consultations from government representatives, UN agencies, NGOs, civil society organizations, journalists, and children. In 2017, UNICEF's situation report indicated that 2.2 million children were out of school.
About 2.8 million who are out of school, children in South Sudan. And this is a kind of representing almost 3 in 5 children in South Sudan who are out of school. And these children are children who are particularly at risk of being excluded from education. And they include girls who are kind of exposed to high risks that often lead to child marriage, early pregnancies. And also we have children who are with disabilities, and they are kind of excluded from accessing education. And then we also have children who are, you know, forced to work or live in the streets.
Yugo says that that kind of increase signals the dire condition of the country's education sector. He says the government is not implementing legislation and policies aimed at improving the education sector, nor has it allocated enough funds for education in its fiscal year budgets, which affects students and teachers.
Only about 13% are trained and qualified. So this affects, you know, the teaching learning process in the schools. I can also highlight that really the schools themselves are very limited in number, not sufficient to take care of the huge number of school-age children. Given that there are few schools in South Sudan, you find that there are long distances for children to cover to go to the schools. Even the schools that exist do have very poor sanitation and water facilities, making the school environment unsafe.
The report recommends that barriers to education, including school fees, lack of schools, and poor sanitation facilities in schools, be addressed. Yugo says most of the schools in South Sudan are incomplete, with only classes from primary 1 to primary 4. He says millions of children are out of school because many parents are poor and struggle to pay registration fees, even though the government says education is supposed to be free. Yugo also says low and irregular teacher salaries have also affected the quality of education because the teachers are often demoralized.
Key to this is really the issue of the teachers. If the teachers can be trained to make them qualified, and then pay them regularly. This is what needs to be done for South Sudan to really be on track. And then the budget needs to be increased, and it has to be commensurate with the, you know, the challenges, the demands that are being addressed. So that is an area that needs advocacy at higher levels.
The report also says many children are traumatized by war and are living in fear. It says untreated mental health conditions are a major contributor to disabilities in South Sudan. The report's authors have called on the national government to sign the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and to ensure that the needs of children with disabilities, including their health and education needs, are provided by the government. The report further states that South Sudan police, prosecutors and lawmakers all lack the specialized training to support child survivors, victims, witnesses or alleged offenders. It says many of people working in criminal justice may not understand the vulnerabilities girls face when coming into contact with the justice system. The report recommends that the justice system work to protect and support not only children who have experienced violence, but also those who have witnessed a crime. It also recommends that juvenile detainees be separated from adult prisoners and calls on the government to create a separate court for juvenile defendants. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how are people surviving in Ethiopia's Tigray region? That story is coming up right after the break.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your biggest regret?
There was a time I beat up my son to the level that he cannot even stand up. So I really pity him, and then I regretted what I did, honestly. And then since then, I have never tried it again.
My biggest regret is when I lost my first wife in 2015, 12 June. But thank God, God has given me another beautiful wife.
I don't have any regret. I have actually tuned myself to know that everything that happens in life is for a purpose.
I can't say I've got a biggest regret, but it's all about challenges. I was able to learn from it and manage it so that everything will go smoothly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The World Health Organization reports hundreds of thousands of people in Tigray do not have adequate access to essential medicines and basic care. It warns the region is at a risk of cholera, measles, malaria, and further spread of COVID-19. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
According to the WHO, about 3.8 million people in Tigray need health assistance. The agency wants to scale up its health services to assist at least 2.3 million this year, but only 87,000 have been reached since May 1st. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says lack of cash and fuel, limited access, insecurity, and depleted medical stocks are some of the many obstacles hampering WHO's life-saving operation.
What we are most concerned with is the fact that it's the season for cholera, and cholera is a problem in the region. Measles, malaria, providing healthcare for people who are injured from the current conflict, and also people who need health, for example, pregnant women, lactating women, children with vaccination, all these are very urgent needs.
A couple of months ago, a first round of an oral cholera vaccination campaign reached more than 2 million people out of the 4 million targeted. Shaib says holding a second round is key to reaching more at-risk people. Shaib, however, says the campaign cannot happen if the WHO is unable to get enough vaccine supplies and maintain a cold chain to store the doses. This, she notes, is difficult because access to electricity is often unavailable and fuel stocks are dwindling. Shaib notes multiple cases of violence or threats of violence against aid workers are hampering efforts to take actions to respond to diseases of epidemic potential, including cholera, measles, malaria, and COVID-19. Another problem of deep concern is the rising level of severe acute malnutrition in the Tigray region. In the first 2 weeks of this month, Shaib says 458 severely acute malnourished children were admitted to stabilization centers for specialized care.
When you have a severely malnourished child, and he gets a disease like malaria and measles, it's really a death sentence for that child. We have 92 stabilization centers previously in place, but there are only 23 who are operational now. 200 more would be needed to address the health risk of malnutrition.
Under these circumstances, WHO says restoring health services is extremely challenging. It says health facilities have been damaged, equipment looted and destroyed, and essential medicines are lacking. Additionally, it says many health workers no longer are available because they are not being paid and face dangers from the prevailing chaotic conditions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At least 50 million people are chronic carriers of the hepatitis B virus, with mortality risk of 25% in Africa. The World Health Organization says hepatitis B carrier rates in sub-Saharan Africa range from 9 to 20%, with transmission occurring predominantly in children. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, about 2% of Kenya's population is affected by the virus.
The Center for Disease Control, CDC, estimates that at least 350 million people worldwide live with hepatitis, with at least five types of hepatitis, type A, B, C, D, and E. Hepatitis B, C, and D are most likely to become chronic, with one person dying every 30 seconds from a hepatitis-related illness worldwide. Reproductive health specialist Dr. Kigen Batilol from Kenya said that hepatitis B is more common, affecting at least 2.5% of the Kenyan population.
Hepatitis, particularly hepatitis B, is one of the key reproductive health issues that we do have. It is sexually transmitted, and unlike the other forms of sexually transmitted, it's one of the transmission of the disease that is actually not controlled by the use of condom. In our population, hepatitis B is at about the percentage of about 2.5% of the population.
Viral hepatitis causes more than 1 million deaths each year across the world, and while deaths from tuberculosis and HIV have been declining, deaths from hepatitis are increasing. Dr. Kigen said that government should give vaccines to children and people at a high risk of contracting the disease in order to control the rate of infections.
So we find that the other ones, hepatitis A, tends to be less common because this is more of an infectious disease. The other two are quite rare in our population. As we always say, prevention is better than cure. So for us, we say that since the hepatitis B vaccine is there, it's a routine vaccine within our system, the health system in Kenya, as a childhood vaccine. We also want to give the vaccine to particularly health workers who are at a higher risk of getting the hepatitis B infection.
Hepatitis E is usually acute but very dangerous in pregnant women. Dr. Kigen recommends that frequent screening, especially for people of reproductive age, is important.
So we normally want to screen so that we can prevent the baby from getting the hepatitis by giving of immunoglobulins at the time of delivery. Long-term effect is that once you get into chronic hepatitis or hepatitis B infection, is that you tend to need to go into antiretrovirals. And these antiretrovirals are actually given for life. So you can see this is a product, it's a reproductive health issue affecting the liver that require chronic treatment for life. If no treatment, you tend to progress into the severe form of the disease. You can go into hepatic, chronic hepatitis with hepatic failure. So really, we need to do more screening, maybe in the general population.
With this year's hepatitis theme being hepatitis can't wait, research from CDC shows that excessive alcohol consumption can also cause liver damage and inflammation, which is sometimes referred to as alcohol hepatitis, whereby the alcohol directly injures the cells of the liver. Other toxic causes of hepatitis include overuse and overdose of medications and exposure to poisons. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
The United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention has updated its guidance on mask wearing. AP correspondent Shelley Adley reports.
CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says scientists have new information about the ability of the Delta variant to spread among vaccinated people. So mask guidance is changing.
In areas with substantial and high transmission, CDC recommends fully vaccinated people wear masks in public indoor settings to help prevent the spread of the Delta variant and protect others.
Schools are also included in that mask recommendation. With an average of more than 57,000 cases a day, the latest surge is mostly affecting the unvaccinated.
With the Delta variant, vaccinating more Americans now is more urgent than ever.
I'm Shelley Adler.
And still on COVID, Britain risks becoming a breeding ground for new variant of the coronavirus that could be resistant to vaccines. That's according to some scientists. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
3, 2, 1! For 16 months, nightclubs were silenced by the pandemic. They reopened July 19th as Britain celebrated so-called Freedom Day. For the young, a chance to forget the misery of lockdown.
We've been the last ones to get the vaccine. We've always been the blame. We've been the blame for the spread of the COVID. COVID, and it's just nice to get freedom and kind of like brush it all off.
But scientists warn those freedoms bring added dangers. Emilia Skirmund is an evolutionary virologist at the University of Oxford.
I think that there will be more infections than we've seen in the last days. With more infections, there is bigger chance that we will see a new variant, which might be even more infectious.
Britain has rolled out one of the fastest vaccination programs in the world. Just over 70% of adults are fully vaccinated. But unlike in the United States and parts of Europe, under-18s haven't been offered the vaccine. Again, Emilia Skirmund.
If we have groups which are unvaccinated, they are they're the danger that the variant, which might be more infectious or better at evading our immune response, will appear that teenagers and children are unvaccinated and the new variant might appear among them.
Some scientists warn the combination of high infection rates and incomplete vaccination programs pose considerable dangers. Sturgios Mostios is from the University of Northumbria.
It is creating the most perfect, fertile ground for the virus, these variants that are present now, to evolve resistance to the vaccine.
So far, British government scientists say there is no evidence that the virus is becoming more resistant to vaccines. And as more people are vaccinated, total infections should decrease, reducing the scope for the virus to mutate. Meanwhile, Britain has one of the world's most advanced genome sequencing programs, so it can quickly identify any new variants of concern. Head of the UK Coronavirus Genome Sequencing Programme, Sharon Peacock.
The key thing we need to look out for, actually, is not just a new variant emerging, a brand new variant emerging, but actually Delta changing to have increasing biological characteristics that could lead to more spread or to increased immune evasion.
14% of the global population is fully vaccinated against the coronavirus, but just 1.1% of people in low-income countries have received a single dose. Again, Emilia Skirmund of the University of Oxford.
We need whole world being vaccinated or having immunity on a certain level. And if only some countries will be vaccinated on that level, that wouldn't give us this global safety net.
As long as large populations remain unvaccinated, scientists say the coronavirus will continue to pose a risk to the whole world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with John Kuduse and the song Habib Gelbi. We've been listening to John Kuduse and his song Habib Gelbi. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.